like all the food that is being delivered throughout this city at various times, and there's some big gaps. And so what our focus point was let's fill the holes first where there is no services being provided, and then also look for opportunities where we can partner with other folks.
The Mobile Hub is funded by the Reaching Home program through United Way BC. While this new program will offer what was previously done at the hub, Paul says a physical space will always be needed in this community.
You know, we got people that are in various pockets of just wherever they can find a little bit of shelter on the streets here. And so what we'd like to have is somewhere where they could actually come inside and get whatever they need, whether it's food, whether it's materials, whether it's help with some phone charging, whatever. We just want to be able to, you know, provide somewhere for them to go.
Back in March, CHY spoke with Sydney Robertson, chairperson of the South End Community Association, or SECA, about her concerns over what would happen in the neighborhood when the hub closed down. SECA was among those who spoke to City Council last summer to request the hub be closed. As a closure approached, however, she expressed concerns that there was not an adequate plan in place for the neighborhood to deal with the transition. But now in May, Robertson tells CHY that since the closure of the hub, SECA has noticed a positive change.
A lot of it was pretty instantaneous for a lot of the area right around where the hub was. It was night and day as soon as it closed.
She says she has seen the Nickel Street side of the building go quiet and the Victoria Street side of the building return to the smaller amount of people who would frequent that area before the hub first opened. While Robertson says the change has been positive for the area and the residents in the neighborhood are enjoying a bit of a relief, she says they are still staying vigilant for what could happen over the next several months.
We're really watching right now to make sure that no encampments start growing, because it's the season when it's easier for people to live rough. But and that can be okay when it's, you know, one person or, you know, one or two people with a tent, and then it turns into a bigger thing and it becomes entrenched, and that's really problematic.
Robertson says SECA will continue to advocate for better services for those living on the street that are not condensed in one area.
We've been advocating to the province as well as the city that Nanaimo needs, I believe right now, at least three hubs. So that, folks can get services without all having to come to the same spot. Mm-hmm. Not everybody wants to come to Nickel Street. And second, so that no one neighborhood has to absorb too much.
For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Yeah. We back here with another hard body presentation. We in the chambers of the high table. See, we brought to you the King's Order, which was the perspective of one king. Now we bring you one order, which is the perspective of a collective of God MCs. I mean, we move in secrecy. We don't even fuck with you if you're not on our frequency. You're in the midst of gods. We expect you to have decency. So let's make a toast. Oh. To the one order. Order. One nation.
One nation.
Who are you to judge the guy? Who are you to judge the guy?
Judge the God.
try and judge the gun.
Oh. Monatomic gold drinking through the diamond studded chalices. Where children get the knowledge, wisdom, and understanding from ancient rulers in these palaces. Where queens hold their kings down through all challenges. See, son, I came to show you you a star, and I ain't talking about where Dallas is. From comedic guards to black global establishments. From selling rock on the block to stashing guap in dirty mattresses. We get it rocking and rolling like Lenny Kravitz did. See, young boy, we came to turn you into a king, a ruler. Take you from a slave and lace you in nothing but Margiela and Medusa. See, we came to give you power. Power is the ability to produce an effect. We came to bring change. We came to make knowledge born. The father of civilization. The father, the founder. The original. And without further ado, we bring to you one order.
One order.
Time now for Gardening with Embark, and joining me in the studio, as always, is Pablo Vimas. Welcome.
Nice to see you, and hello, everyone.
Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. We're end of May, almost the beginning of June.
Yes. Interesting that May has passed very fast. And yeah, so at the end of this next week, June's around here. And yeah, so June, if you have walk around your garden, if you have visit other community gardens, if you take long walks through the forest, you will see that most of the native plants or native berries are loaded.
They're coming out.
Yeah. So June is a berry month. At the moment, I noticed that all our wild strawberries, berries, more plants close to the ground with tiny little red strawberries, they are already ready to pick.
Excellent. And they are so, so sweet.
They are.
Those little wild berries.
Yes, they are. So they are ready to pick. And I have seen all the other, like gummy berry, the wild raspberries, thimbleberries, the hackberries. They're all red. And the salmon berries, they are ready to pick. So, yeah, so berry month. So if you have some berries, keep an eye that you need to keep watering with this weather, and be ready to harvest them in the coming weeks.
And good to make sure you inform you if you're heading out for a hike or something, inform yourself about which are the edible berries and which are the ones you should be looking for, because they're going to be all out there.
They will be all out there, and you will be doubting, should I eat, should I not? So get to know your native berries will be just all around in the pot.
So May has been quite a varied month, weather, almost March-like in its sun and rain and cool and hot. But now we're back into some hot weather, and it's also quite humid, so that brings some issues.
Yes, it does. So what we noticed is that we had this, the last first 2 weeks of this, first 2 days of this week, very wet, very moisty. And yesterday the sun came, and all the water that is on the ground is just evaporating, very humid. I noticed that the thimbleberries are having the wild powdery mildew, which is a disease that very much affect all the squashes. So talking zucchinis, cabbages, zucchinis and squashes and pumpkins. And that is why we this fungus disease affects all our crops at the end of their life. So we are talking around August, September. But now I'm seeing early in the season. It's because of this change of weather, like hot, cold, rainy, moist. For us in the garden, we just need to keep an eye on the crops to see how they're doing. Make sure that we don't water the leaves, you water the soil, and so keep the humidity lower. And if you see some of the plants getting sick, or what I usually do is just trim, remove the leaves that are sick, and hopefully that is, stops the spreading of the fungal disease.
What about, you know, when it's that that fungal disease, what about just removing that plant? I mean,
well, fungal spores are all always floating in the air. Right. So if we reduce the environment where they tend to grow, like high humidity, high temperature, the risk for them to developing is lower.
Right.
But yeah, is in nature, is everything around nature. So yeah, if, even if you do your best, your plants will get it. Yeah. The other thing that we notice in the garden, might notice if you walk every at least once a week, you will notice that some pests are enjoying the produce. And so what I have, like we've been talking about applying, making your own pesticides, like using garlic, using chili to make your own insecticide or pesticide. But sometimes nature wins, tends to win. So in that case, I always go with our sacrificial crops.
Right.
So this is a crop that when you walk and you notice that, this crop is being chewed by all the insects, is really being the feeding of all the insects in the garden. Yep. Do not remove.
Yeah.
Because that is the sacrificial crop. So last year I had kohlrabi. Mm-hmm. All the slugs that were in the garden were just in these three plants, eating the leaves, eating the globes of the kohlrabi, enjoying it. Well, a few steps away we had all the cabbages, the broccoli, the cauliflower, all growing fantastic. No problem. Like everyone just directed to those kohlrabi. Yeah. This year in our garden we have the pak choi. The pak choi, all the leaves, you can see holes, just whatever was a leaf, they are eating it. Being the slugs, being these caterpillars from the white cabbage butterfly. And so I'm just living there because next to the pak choi, I have radishes. And we know that radishes is one of the crops that the white cabbage butterfly loves. They can devour all that crop in no time, those little caterpillars. So, again, I just leave those pak choi in there. They are the sacrificial crops, while the rest is still flourishing and growing fantastic in the garden.
And, of course, if you take out the plant, all those caterpillars and slugs, unless you have a way to get rid of them as well, they're just going to move on to the next thing.
Correct.
Next tasty thing that they see.
Absolutely right. So it's better just feed them as well, part of nature.
Yeah.
We have that big approach. In the garden is the home not only for our vegetables, but as well for nature, all the insects that are around, and just let them be, and your crops also will be fine. So that thing, don't remove, because the insects and the pests will move to the closest crop, which is tasty, delicious too.
Excellent.
So, that is all about this very nice month of May that's almost finishing. Yeah. And we're moving to June. June is a fantastic month, as I mentioned, lots of berries, lots of spring crops that we continue harvesting. Yeah. We continue planting and growing vegetables like lettuce, that is a variety of bolt resistant lettuce, radishes going in there. We tend to slow down with pak choi because they tend to bolt, the same with any mustard crop. If we have a cold space in the shade, we can continue growing spinaches, we can start planting carrots for the fall.
So
that's a very intensive. And one thing that we might be talking next week is about caring about our tomatoes.
Right.
Because if we don't manage those tomatoes, they are going to go all over the place. So, so tomatoes, keep an eye on them. They start flowering. So that will be for coming weeks to talk about that.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. You'll be back next week.
Yes.
And we'll be talking about those tomatoes.
Those tomatoes, correct.
Excellent. How do people find out more about Embark Sustainability?
Embark is based here in the SFU Burnaby campus in the Student Union on the ground floor. Yep. You can come and visit us, have a chat. We have two main streams of interest. One is food justice and climate equity. Both of them certainly connect with gardening, growing food. Yep. So you can visit our website at embarksustainability.org or come to our social media at Embark Sustainability.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
This is Peter R.H. I've got three members of the SFU Mock UN, or Model UN, and we'll go each separately from right to left.
Hi, I am Gia Batla. I am the co-president of the club, and I make sure that the club is run smoothly.
I'm Swara Bhatte. I am VP Internal Relations for the Model UN Club, and I'm just in charge of like logistics, like room booking and things like that, making sure club operations are running as they should.
I'm Benjamin Mayhew. I'm the VP of Simulation Design for the club. My job is to design the simulations and the in-house committees that we simulate and make sure that those are running smoothly and that the delegates are prepared.
One thing that I'm as such critical is that the Model UN and the SFU is not the only one with them. They're across the United States and Canada, and I assume across the world, aren't they?
They're globally distributed, yeah.
However, they're not officially part of the UN.
That's correct.
But they're endorsed, because I'm looking at on the internet right now. It's called Mock UN?
Model UN.
Model UN. And it seems to be very firmly endorsed by the United Nations, however.
Yeah, it's my understanding that the UN endorses these kinds of activities primarily as an educational exercise. We would be of the opinion that these activities, even though you don't impact policy directly, you do learn quite a bit about the various problems facing the world and how the United Nations can act to address them. And it also serves to build a whole bunch of other skills for those who participate. So just because we're not, you know, directly producing legislation, although we'd love to do that.
Well, it's not so much whether you're doing legislation or not. Here on their part of their website, the United Nations, assuming, yeah, the Secretary General's message to Model UNs around the world, I've heard it, it's kind of short. So it's endorsed, but I'm kind of critical about it not being part of the United Nations. In a sense that I see no reason why it shouldn't be. That doesn't mean, I mean, it could be that it's part of it in that, not that you're making decisions or anything, but it would just be, okay, here's a group, post-secondary students around the world, and it would be just be part of what the UN is as such. So I don't know if you would say anything about that.
I mean,
I think that I see where you're coming from, because young people around the world have always felt that, you know, we kind of want to be heard. So I see where you're coming from.
You know, and I think that it's worth saying, I know for at least the NMUN conference, which is held in New York every year, that is in the actual United Nations headquarters. So the UN does participate to some extent with Model UN. In terms of like how it could directly incorporate Model UN into its framework, I'm not sure specifically how that would work. Because a lot of these movements, I know our club was a student-initiated effort, so it would be really difficult for the UN to like come to Simon Fraser University as an institution and say, we want to do a Model UN here. Because this was initiated by students of the school rather than, you know, from above.
Okay, but it sort of has some recognition in some way. The other thing about the UN structure is such, for example, the World Bank, the IMF, are considered part of United Nations system. Mm-hmm. And the World Book Encyclopedia has a flow chart of this. They say, well, it's part of the system. And it's not really part of the United Nations. Well, it's part of the system. So I got here a book here. These are updates with encyclopedias they'll do for the year. So it says 1947. However, this is the year 1946. Caller's Encyclopedia. There was created in 1946 a group called the World Federation of the United Nations Associations.
Interesting.
This got split up into the United Nations Associations of Brazil, of Canada. And the World Federalists, Bertrand Russell, the philosopher, I don't know if any of you three are aware of him. Yeah, he died 73. He actually was part of the World Federalists.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually the association, reading from the book, as the second session of the General Assembly in New York's Flushing Meadows Park, there was a direct participation in the work of the UN by more than 500 delegates who were not specifically part of the UN, but they wanted to create something that had a public input
into the UN.
Yes, and as I said, and that was called the World Federation of United Nations Associations. And what happened, as I said, it split into the two groups. How are the reasons why you think you became part of the group?
That's a really good question, actually. I know for me, so I'm an international studies major, and I really wanted to get involved in something that would teach me more about the world we're in. And I think especially with everything happening currently in on the political landscape, it's more important than ever to be in the know. And so I joined Model UN in the hopes that I would learn about different politicals or socio-political issues. And the second thing that I think a lot of us would agree on is also the amount of soft skills that this club really helps you build. Everything from public speaking, collaboration, negotiation. It's a lot more kind of like what Ben was saying, is that it's a lot more of the educational aspect of it. If anyone wants
to add anything, yeah. To add on to that, I think that when you simulate the UN versus like a model parliament or something, because you're getting delegates who are representing all these different countries in the world, I think not only do you get to talk about a much broader variety of issues, but you also get more perspectives, right? Like if you're just doing model parliament, you don't get to hear about what the government of Uganda or Palau might think about a specific issue. And I think that that often exposes you to a lot more perspectives on a lot of different issues. And then I'll also agree on, you get a lot of skills, a skill building through participation in things like Model UN. People think of public speaking, but there's also negotiation and research and how to prepare for a committee or a meeting or all of these other things which are really relevant to careers. I study economics, and I hope to go into public policy one day. So the skills that you learn in Model UN is critical to that sort of field of study.
Jumping off of that, alongside the skills that it helps you build in your career, and it also opens up a lot of perspectives you find about yourself as a person. I personally have learned a lot to stay calm during conflicts or any problems that arise, just so we could work together, and it helps with teamwork, collaboration like Swara mentioned, and public speaking like Ben and Swara both mentioned. I personally joined this club because I wanted to check out an academic opportunity for myself, and because at the time that I had joined, this club was pretty dead. I helped start it up back again. So people like all of the people who are in our teams, like co-execs and people who are just a member of our club in general, would have a space where they could talk about international politics, where they could present their opinion without being controversial about it and without actually being scared that their opinion, just because it might differ with somebody else, it would hinder their ability to be present in that room.
Why do you think it was dormant for a while?
I think a major reason was COVID, and after that it just never really jumped back up again. I remember meeting in the small room, the SAS room upstairs, that was just like five people and sitting in a room talking about what we should do, and everybody in that room was going to graduate after that semester ended. So after that, the club was just basically dead. No meetings, no social media presence. So me and four other people, we decided we want to do this. We want to send SFU to conferences. We want to make sure that SFU has a place on the map.
Well, the conferences, what exactly are the conferences in the sense that you're not a part as such of the United Nations? So what are the conferences?
Conferences are like, there are different organizations that kind of come together and create like a conference where different schools can come and participate or even like compete, for example, like we have Northwest Model United Nations is an organization, and they're typically educational, again, not really affiliated with the
UN. Well, if I can just interject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're from the colleges or the educational
things,
as opposed to UN, like they're sort of...
Yeah, they're run by schools.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They're educational organizations. So we have one here called, down in, like, Seattle and, like, that kind of area under the Northwest Model United Nations. And we were able to send delegations to, they run two conferences. They run one in Seattle and they run one in Portland every year. And so we were able to send our delegations to both of those conferences. Different schools come together and it gives us an opportunity to meet other delegates from different areas.
And there are also conferences which are on a bit of a larger scale. I mentioned NMUN briefly, and we've also attended Harvard's World Model UN. This year it was in Peru. I was part of the SFU delegation that went. So it's really just you do get to meet people from all over the world and interact with you get to propose solutions and you get to learn about all of these different issues. It's an educational tool more than anything.
Well, you seem to have a fair number of people at the meeting.
Yes.
I attended. So it seems to be off at a lot of the people at that meeting were new as such.
That was a welcome meeting that you came to. So actually, a majority of the people there were...
I think of the room that we had there, I think we had, with the exception of the executives, I think five people who were regular attendees of the club, and everyone else was a first-timer.
You had about 30 people or more.
Yeah. No, it was really, really exciting, especially for summer.
Yeah.
Well, I think it'll be going well. And actually, this is the summer term also, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it looks like you'll have people who are... students here who are interested in the organization.
Yeah.
Also, sorry to cut you off.
No, how's the time coming, Magnus?
Getting to wrap it up.
Yeah. Get
involved.
How about you can make the last statements? I mean, that'd be fine.
Also, it's just aside from that, we noticed that whenever we put our tables at Clubs Day or anywhere in the sub or AQ, a lot of people come by and they always say, oh, I've always wanted to try Model UN, and I've always wanted to do that in high school, or I did that in high school. So given that we started a club here, I think that also opens up the opportunity for them to come and check it out and try it out again if they'd like to.
Yeah, and anyone who's listening, who's interested, we have a website at munsite.netify.app.
SFUMUN.com. SFUMUN.com.
And then we also have Instagram and other various social medias, LinkedIn as well. So if you're interested, check us out. We meet every Monday at 6:30.
SFUMUN.com.
Something curious, something cultural. Something unserious? Sometimes serious. Something mundane. Something everyday. though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday. You heard that right, Monday. From 3 to 4 p.m., your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.